Starting tomorrow, there are just 40 days left of 2025. So what will 2026 bring? We just had a very timely message from Mr. Armstrong, which was delivered away over 40 years ago. And I'm going to cheat and pinch a bit of it as my introduction, because he covers it far better than I ever could. He said, "I wonder if you understand that your Bible is telling the truth," which is something that isn't very popular these days, "that in your Bible is the absolute prophecy of all these things that you will see in this world today. It's about time we wake up and understand. In the Bible, it gives you an analysis of this news. It tells you the significance, the true significance. It tells you why it's happening, where we're going, what's on ahead, and what's going to happen next, and what is in the real meaning of it all. What is the purpose being worked out here below by the divine, supernatural, miracle, almighty God above?" What is God actually doing? So I thought we'd do today is a title, if you want a title, "What Comes Next?" Now, first of all, I want to look at a couple of numbers, because numbers are interesting. We mustn't get gaga over them, by the way. I know we went through a period in the 70s where we were all setting dates and all the rest of it, and that's not the purpose of what I'm going into right now. However, numbers can be significant. It would be 40 years since Mr. Armstrong died in a few weeks' time. The number 40 is tied to trials, and the last 40 years has certainly been a trial in God's church. God wanted to see who would hold fast to the truth that he had given the church. He wanted to see who would earnestly contend for the faith that was once and for all delivered to the saints. And haven't the results been interesting? Now, another time period ended this year. It's been 80 years since the end of World War II. 80 years of relative peace. And I say relative peace, but we here haven't personally been involved in a war. Is that period about to end? If you turn to Judges, chapter 3, one of these little gory stories that's in the Bible that the children love to hear. Verse 4, and this is what it boils down to in actual fact, this whole 6,000-year period. "And they were to prove Israel by them, to know whether they would hearken unto the commandments of the Lord, which he commanded their fathers by the hand of Moses." That's what God has been doing from the beginning of mankind. He wants to see people who will do things his way, who will obey him. You can get that in Leviticus 26. Let's just read that quickly. Leviticus 26. And it lays it out quite clearly. Starting in verse 1, it says, "You shall make you no idols nor graven images," and so on. Goes into the law, in other words. "You shall keep my Sabbaths," verse 2. "If you walk in my statutes," verse 3, "and keep my commandments to do them, then," and he lists a whole raft of blessings. A whole raft of blessings. "Rain in due season will give you peace, will chase your enemies," and so forth and so on. But if you come up to verse 12, he says, and this is what Christ wants. This is what Christ has wanted from day one. "I will walk among you and will be your God, and you will be my people. I am the eternal your God, which brought you forth out of the land of Egypt," and so forth. Excuse me. That's what Christ has always wanted. He wants people who will obey him. And if you go through the Bible, all you're seeing is people who go through a series of trials, some of them very obvious, like, for instance, Abraham. And what did God say at the end of that trial? "Now I know. Now I know that Abraham will obey me, and he will teach his children." Yes? So, you know, it's that's what God wants. Now, in this story in Judges, it's the one where Ehud, with a rather a large gentleman, In fact, from my Gary, he was a huge gentleman, and he was evil. And somebody came and delivered a message to him in the form of a 1 cubit long sword, which he rammed into his stomach, and the whole thing literally disappeared inside him, and then he headed for the hills. In verse 15, it says, "When the children of Israel cried unto the Eternal of the Lord, the Lord raised unto them a deliverer." This caused great friction, obviously, in the country. But when the people cried out, God listened, as he did through all through the Bible, but particularly in the book of Judges. And in verse 30, it says, "So Moab was subdued that day under the hand of Israel, and the land had rest 80 years. 80 years. It's now 80 years since Israel subdued Germany. Now, I'm not setting dates. What I am saying is God does use numbers. Numbers have meaning. And it's going to be a good idea to watch now what happens this next year. That is what I'm trying to get across. It could be very revealing. Because if you look at the news, or watch the news carefully, you'll see, as we'll go through some of the stuff, things are on a knife edge. They really are on a knife edge. They weren't in 1972. In fact, we were so convinced that it wasn't going to be 1972 that one of our children was actually born in 1972. So there you go. But I'm afraid now the situation is somewhat different. So let's just have a look. Starting right now, what's building up right now? Turn to Isaiah 9. We'll just try and go through a list of prophecies, so you know where they are, and they've got them in the head, because this is history which is going to be unfolding in front of us in the next few years. And I mean few years. As you'll see, when this thing starts, it's like the dominoes that you make these, you know, you put the dominoes up one after the other, you tip the one and the whole lot just roll the way through. That's how world events are going to be going, that quick. Isaiah 9 verse 21. "Manasseh, Ephraim, and Ephraim, Manasseh, and they together shall be against Judah. For all this, his anger is not turned away, but his hand is stretched out still." This seems to indicate that the coming up, in fact, actually starting to happen right now, the USA and Britain are starting to lose that special relationship that we enjoyed for so many years. And together, they're having a scrap with Judah, because the Jewish people are wanting to be masters of their own destiny. And America and Britain and a number of other nations are trying to prescribe a solution, a two-state solution, which neither the Jews nor the Arabs want for various reasons. So, there you go. That's a problem. The Bible thing there is that they chew on each other. They chew. Britain and America chew on each other. President Trump has just been very, very poorly treated by the BBC. I mean, they're trying to cover up this by fancy language, but let's be blunt about it. They just lied through their teeth. They took things, they spliced things in, they made it look like what he said was completely different than what he actually has said. And he's going to sue them for $1 billion, allegedly. We used to say Britain rules the waves. Today we say Britain waves the rules, because that's the way we live. Britain decides to have Rolls-Royce make a new generation of mini nuclear power stations instead of having agreed to give the contract to a US company. That's really gone down like a lead balloon. And both have problems with Judah. They're both pushing the two-state solution, which neither the Jews nor the Arabs want. And we have complete disagreement on so many levels. Also building up right now, Deuteronomy 28. Anybody who can't see this one is truly blind. Deuteronomy 28 and verse 43. "The stranger that is within thee shall get up above thee very high, and you shall come down very low. He shall lend to you, and you will not lend to him. He will be the head, and you will be the tail." Now, a modern translation puts that, "The foreigners living among you will become stronger and stronger, while you become weaker and weaker." Well, the Good News Bible says, "Foreigners who live in your land will gain more and more power, while you gradually lose yours." What's happening in New York at the moment? Very interesting situation. And there's one of these figures of speeches, which is something we don't pay much attention to today, but in Hebrew is very important. And it's a pixizousis, I think it's pronounced. It means a word repeated for emphasis. In other words, when it says you will become high, in Hebrew it would say you become high, high, and you know they will become high and you will become low, low. It's an emphasis of how vast the difference is. At the moment, we've got 1.3 million migrants, so-called, in this country, who are being paid for, by the government. 1.3 million, and they're getting several hundred pounds each every week. You know, that's just not sustainable. We can't afford that. Now, the world's financial situation. This is a situation, as we will see if we go along, this is a lot more important than most people give credence to. We have massive layoffs starting already because of this AI business. It can also be an excuse for some companies to shed staff they don't want. Skyrocketing silver and gold prices. Exploding debt. America is now $37 trillion in debt. Remember how much a trillion is. $1 billion is, in $100 bills, is a 3-foot cube. It's a 3-foot cube. In $100 bills, that's $1 billion. $1 trillion is an acre covered in those pallets too high. That gives you some idea as to what a trillion is. And Uncle Sam is looking at 37 of those trillions and counting. Go onto the internet, just type in US debt clock, and up will come a very fancy website that it shows you how money's being spent, and income, of course, in America. And the debt thing is whizzing around so fast, you can't keep tabs on it. And for all Mr. Trump was going to cut this and cut this and cut the next thing, they can only do so much. The problems are too big. The problems are way too big. So we have to ask ourselves, is the financial system falling apart or not? We just had a report the other day about NVIDIA, the people that make the computer chips, coming up with fantastic earnings and huge profits, and then another bunch of people saying they were going under and selling all their shares. Very, very, very confusing. So what's actually happening? Well, remember Mr. Babson, and Mr. Armstrong quoted Walter Babson about when you want to know what the temperature is going to be in the room tomorrow, you go down into the boiler room to see what the boiler's doing. Right, well, here's an example. If you look at the number of vessels on the high seas carrying goods all around the world, it should be 71 at the moment. It's actually 41. Below the 60-ship floor that has held for 20 years. In other words, the last 20 years, we've been averaging 20 ships on the ocean loaded sky high with goods being tracked all around the world. Now, these container ships are huge. They're absolutely massive. So this is not a dip. This is cardiac arrest of the 28 trillion trade system that feeds your stores, your job, your portfolio. When the ships stop, factories stop. When factories stop, your paycheck stops. So this is what's in the pipeline for the next few months. 41 ships instead of 71 ships. Doesn't look good, does it? You bet it doesn't look good. Now, the Fed is already bailing out banks again on the very, on the QT, as they say. Keep it nice and quiet. Don't get people panicking. The mainstream media stays silent. Why? They don't want panic. But the truth is, the panic might already be setting in. Young Americans are publicly admitting they have no plans to pay off their debt. On TikTok, skipping student loan payments or ignoring credit card balances has become a trend rather than a taboo. One girl was reported saying, well, I owe over $300,000. And you know what? I'm not going to pay. And what can they do? If I die, it'll all just disappear anyway, so what does it matter? And that's the attitude. The US and Britain particularly have a huge welfare crisis, and includes Europe as well, because there's more and more older people living longer and longer and drawing pensions, and the system just can't handle that. National debt continues to reach record highs while the welfare state increases. Yet 1 in 10 Americans living off Uncle Sam is wholly unsustainable and indicative of a failed society. 10% of Americans get food stamps. They need it to keep up to keep a reasonable diet. That's a couple hundred dollars or whatever it is a month to millions of people. Millions of people. Then the stock market is wobbling, as they say. Is this AI just a bubble? People are investing huge sums of money in some things and not in others. I mean, for instance, they're going on these data centers. Oh, you've got to have data centers. Massive data centers. There's one data center so big that the cooling water is being used to heat a whole town. Quite incredible. But where's the electricity coming from? Then to put people on electric cars. Try charging the wretched things. It's just not that easy, especially in cities. You've got these wires all over the place. So, is the financial system falling apart? It is simply not sustainable in its present form. We cannot go on borrowing, borrowing, borrowing. And the big question I've got is, who are we borrowing from? You see, the world debt at the moment is over $300 trillion, right? That's if you look at the whole world, all the nations that have got debt. $300 trillion. If we look at the interest payable on that, this is where that nice usury term comes in. 5% would be a reasonable return on that kind of money, sometimes more, sometimes a little bit less. What's 5%? Of 300 trillion. It's a lot, right? Who's getting it? How much is it actually? Think about it. 300 trillion, that would be 30, be 10%, so it would be 100, be 15 trillion. $15 trillion a year is going into somebody's back pocket. That's half the American, well, just under half of the American debt. Does that sound to you like a stable system? The debt bubble has to burst. Nations cannot continue to spend money they haven't got. Now then, here we get down to where it gets really interesting. We are watching for the resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. Now, what's that got to do with the financial situation? Well, it's got a whole lot. From the very beginning, excuse me, the first issue of the Plain Truth magazine in the beginning of 1934, God warned his people to watch out for the resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. The message never changed. The message has never changed. And we're still sitting here today talking about it. We're talking about the resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. Now, a lot of people will laugh when you say that because they look at Europe and with its hodgepodge of nations that have spent most of the last few centuries fighting each other. It's a bit difficult to visualize this lot ever really getting together. What has this event got to do with the coming financial disaster that Mr. Armstrong warned about in his sermon entitled Prophecy Part 1, given in July 1984, 40 years ago. Here's where it gets very interesting. I can see now the event that is going to trigger the formation of the reunification in Europe, the resurrection of the medieval Holy Roman Empire that we've been looking forward to, that is prophesied to come. I believe that some event is going to happen suddenly, like out of a clear blue sky, and it's going to shock the whole world, and it's going to cause the nations of Europe to realize they must unite. Well, now, I think I can see that maybe the very event is going to trigger it, and that would be the economic situation in the world. Now when the financial structure breaks down, all civilization is going to break down. This is not a local thing. This is not a little mini stock market crunch. This is major league. This is the whole financial system breaks down. And as we all know, there's another financial digital system in the background lurking to take over. And when that happens, the whole world will be a different place. The financial situation is directly tied by Mr. Armstrong, or by Jesus Christ, in effect, to the formation of Europe. The two go together, finances in Europe. And I think there's one or two ways we can look at this, and we'll see how it could possibly be like that. When the financial structure breaks down, all civilization is going to break down. That would include America and Britain. I will break the pride of your power, God says. If the bottom fell out of the dollar, America would be nothing. They would be nothing. They've just launched, or just commissioned, another aircraft carrier. I've got the name of it further on, you will see it. But it's $11.6 billion worth of ship. $11.6 billion for one ship. And who paid for that? Future generations, because it's all been done on borrowed money. But meanwhile, Europe has been getting ready. Their industry is gearing up for war in the West. In the West, US and GB and Britain are mired in debt with debased currencies, drowning in drugs and morally lost. You see it every day in the news. Tent cities appearing in front of the Waldorf Hotel. A big park in New York full of displaced people. No place to live. Living under a polythene sheet. And stealing to get enough money so they can live. Or enough drugs to where they can drown their sorrows to where it doesn't really matter what they do. Meanwhile, in Germany, attitudes are changing. They are preparing to meet the problem head on. The Evangelical Church in Germany has renounced its long-held pacifist stance in its latest peace memorandum, stating that violence is sometimes necessary to counter violence. Now, if you've got any idea of history at all, if you know a little bit about Germany, you should be terrified to hear that. Even God says, in Isaiah, was it Isaiah 10? He says, "Oh, Assyrian, rod of my anger." Read that section. It says it's not in his heart to be like this. But basically God says, I'm making him like this, to tread them in the mire. It's coming. See, these are all little dominoes going up. Meanwhile, the digital financial system is up and running and ready to fulfill Revelation 13 verse 17. And that no man might buy, sell, save that he has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. If you don't have a government account number, you're dead meat. No driving license, no passport, no insurance, no rent, no diesel or petrol to stick in your car, and no food. No, nothing. You are a non-person. That's already there. The system is up and it's working. They've not pushed it too much at the moment because obviously it's a little bit, a problem. But when the situation gets bad, when all civilization breaks down and somebody comes along and says, here's what we're going to do, people, bang. And they'll all say, well, thank goodness we've got a bit of leadership around here. What leadership we got today? You got Mr. Trump up there doing his thing. For a lot of the time, he's doing fantastic things. He's definitely got things moving and he's changing and all that. But there's also an undercurrent there where a lot of people don't like what he's doing. Only half the country is with him. The other half are against him. And that divide is splitting more and more and more. What leadership have we got in this country? I don't want to get into the politics of the thing, but some of the people who are up there purporting to be leaders don't understand what the word means. There's no leadership. And God says the leaders that you've got, they're driving you astray. They won't meet a problem head on. This migrant situation, other countries don't have it, but we've got it. Why? Well, we say, well, come here, we'll give you this, we'll give you this, we'll give you this, we'll give you this. We'll give. Meanwhile, we're borrowing the money to give. It's stupid. It simply can't happen. But there you go. In a sermon given in November 1982, entitled United States of Europe is Coming, Mr. Armstrong makes the following points. Europe, realizing that the US cannot protect them against Russia, unites. Now, this is where we watch what's happening in Ukraine, because Mr. Trump has given the Ukrainians an ultimatum that by, I think it's Friday this next week, they've got to agree to his 20-point plan or whatever it is, which is not very favorable to Ukraine. In fact, it's very favorable to Russia. Mr. Armstrong continues, remember, the one way to unite many groups with different outlooks is to present a common enemy. That's how you unite people to accept a digital currency. Your common enemy is that what you had, you've lost. It's all gone. We can build up again, but we've got to do it like this. And there you go. And people will accept it. They want their own military force to protect themselves. Mr. Armstrong concludes, the whole United States of Europe, when it goes together, is going to trigger nuclear World War III. That sounds a bit a bold statement. He also made other bold statements, that the Berlin Wall will come down and the Eastern European nations will all join the European Union, which all seems to have happened amazingly, out of a clear blue sky. So, Europe unites, yes, Russia is the threat, and American protection is now history, but there's another often overlooked reason for this sudden change in Europe. And this is the real reason. Turn to Revelation 17, verse 17. Don't forget this verse, ever. Stick it on the fridge, or whatever. These 10 nations get together because God made them. They had no choice. For God has put in their hearts to fulfill his will and to agree and to give their kingdom unto the beast until the words of God shall be fulfilled. In other words, it's a part of God's plan. Therefore, it will happen. Go back and read it. I think it's in Isaiah 10. He talks about, you know, oh, Syria got a rod of my anger. And read on down. And he says, I'm calling you. You tread them into the mire. And then he says, it's not in his heart to do this, but I'm making him do it. Just as I made Cyrus let the Jews go back and build a temple. Just as I let Nebuchadnezzar coexist with Daniel. God can do anything. If it's in his plan, it happens. And the other thing is, which I did cover a bit in the update this week, don't forget the religious element in all this. Revelation 17, verse 3. If you want to turn there and have a read of this. Because this is history. This is what Mr. Armstrong was getting at the beginning of this broadcast today. This has not happened yet. This is the real news. The stuff we put up on the website is history. It's happened. It's gone. Can't alter it. Unless you've got AI, of course, you can say anything you want. Revelation 17, verse 3. So he carried me away in the spirit unto the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit on a scarlet-colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, having 7 heads and 10 horns. And then down in verse 18, it says, and the woman which you saw is that great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. The woman rides the beast. She controls it. Now, the city that rules over the is Rome. That happened a couple of years back. I must dig that out again, actually. But there was a big crisis in Europe, and where did all the heads of state, at 24 hours' notice, got access to the Pope in Rome for a meeting? All 27 of them, except Britain. Britain wasn't allowed in, because at that moment we were ditching ourselves out of Brexit. Yeah, they went straight to the Pope, and he dressed them down. Told them straight that the whole financial structure was wrong, political structure was wrong, and so forth. And who gives the beast his power? Revelation 13, verse 2. Again, this is something we need to really keep in mind. Satan would have us believe he's a cute little thing with a forked tail and little horns and all the rest of it and a smirk on his face. He's far from that. Revelation 13, verse 2. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon, Satan, gave him his power and his seat and his great authority. When Adolf Hitler came to power, he was just another politician. He was a bit on the rowdy side, a bit of a rabble-rouser. He could get a crowd worked up. But when they got into that Olympic stadium, and he had tens of thousands of people all lined up, he started talking. I mean, you can go and listen to it on the internet. And he's quite, you know, you would normally speak to that sort of a crowd. You're speaking a bit more slowly and a bit more different. But if you just watch his face, it changes. And in the end, he's really hammering it. And the people respond. A whole sea of arms. Sieg Heil. He had them in his hand. How? Because it was Satan doing this. And from that, he never looked back. So let's go into some of the other little prophecies now. Daniel 12, verse 11. Again, there's a few things here that we've kind of overlooked a little bit. Daniel 12, verse 11. From the time the daily sacrifice shall be taken away and the abomination that makes desolate set up, there shall be 1,290 days. Right? That's the 1290 day mark. That's what everybody wants to watch for, right? No. Not exactly. Oh, we're going to watch for it. I mean, obviously it's going to be massive, but there's much more than that. Much more than that. There's another thing associated with this, which we can cover. We'll cover that in a minute. Round about this time, when the 1290 day thing is taking place, turn to Hosea 5. Here's another major event that's taking place. What I'm trying to point out to you is where we're going is chaos. Total, unbridled chaos. There's no other word for it. Hosea 5 verse 13, when Ephraim saw his sickness, or it's more oftenly translated grief, and Judah saw his wound, then went Ephraim to the Assyrian and sent to King Jareb, which is the beast, yet could he not heal you, nor cure you of your wound. Now, again, it's Isaiah 10 verse 5, the Assyrian. Assyrian is the beast. Now, why? There's obviously two things happened here. Something has happened in this country, in Britain, to cause a great deal of grief, according to, it's mostly translated. God says, I'll take all the wise men away in one day. Does somebody drop a jumbo jet onto the Houses of Parliament and take out the whole government? There's all sorts of things that can happen. In this day and age, you can write nothing off. Is it because he's involved with a war with Islam, which we'll look at in a minute? And note, there's no US help at this time. So we can start timing this, can't we? If there's no US help, we've had the financial disaster and America's wiped out. Okay? This appears to happen after the formation of the Holy Roman Empire as the beast is in office. They go to the beast. He's got to be the beast. He's got to be in office. So that's already happened. But before the 1290 mark, when the beast surrounds Jerusalem, which is obvious, And that difference in time is days. It's 45 days maybe, or thereabouts. Right. So this is something else going on, which involves, of course, the Middle East. Speculation. With no outside help available, is this the point when the Jews finally turn to God, starting the daily sacrifices? Maybe. You know what? Those sacrifices are cut off by this army coming down. There is no argument about that. It's in your Bible in black and white, right? Now, what would that do to the 450 to 500 million Muslims who surround Israel? Can you imagine what that would do? It would be pretty violent. Now, I mean, the Arabs, in all fairness to the Jews, the Arabs have got no claim on Israel at all. If you go back, they use a part of the Quran that says that Muhammad went to the furthest Islamic church. But that was Medina. It wasn't Jerusalem. Never had control like that. But they've always wanted to control Israel. Why? To stop the Jews. You go back to Ishmael and Israel. There's a problem. It's a problem to go back thousands of years. It's still there. Nothing's changed. This is what the Americans don't understand. Nobody wants the two-stage solution in the Middle East. The Jews won't allow it, and the Arabs want all of it. It's not going to be a two-state solution. It's going to be an Islamic state solution. And the Jews all swimming for Cyprus, if they survive at all. And they're not going to change anything else. They're not interested. Mr. Trump's trying to bribe them. Oh, we'll do this. We'll buy all your oil, and you get all this money, and you can build up this infrastructure. And they're not interested. It doesn't mean a hill of beans to them. It's waste. They waste money like, it's terrible the way they waste money. They're not interested at all. All they're interested in is Islam taking over the planet. Get used to it, because that's what they're after. But the West nations, they can't see that. They can't allow it. This would certainly stir up things in Islam. Now we come to the Pastoral General's Report in November the 20th, 1979, entitled "The Time We Are In Now." I want to make a point here. If you're not studying what Mr. Armstrong wrote, you won't get any of this, because it's the only place you'll find it. I've yet to find this information anywhere else apart from people who were taught by Mr. Armstrong using his works. Never before have we understood these periods of 1260, 1290, and 1335 days. But it seems evident now a blessing is pronounced on us, God's church, who wait and endure until the 1335 days, approximately 1335 days prior to Christ's coming. But since no one can know the day or the hour of his coming, we probably shall not be able to know the exact time of this 1335 day begins. But apparently it will be the time when our work shall end. Now, you know, when Mr. Armstrong was doing the work at the time, it would be very difficult to cut the church off, because we had churches all over the world. We probably had, I don't know, several hundred, getting up towards 1,000, I believe, at one stage. We certainly had over 1,500 ministers. You just can't cut that off suddenly. But today, how long would it take to cut us off? If we put up a fight, maybe 24 hours, and that's it. They just kill you on the internet. In fact, in all fairness, what the Germans will do when they take over is they will kill the internet and put their beast net up there, and we won't be able to get on it anyway. Not that we'd want to. But he says, but this will be the time when the United Europe shall appear, the revival of the medieval Holy Roman Empire. We shall then be warned and readied to be taken to a place of refuge and safety from the great tribulation. And you can interpret that however you want. We're left to think. We were told to watch. We were told what to watch for. Mr. Armstrong, writing in July 84, he said, "I can now see the event that is going to trigger the formation of the reunification in Europe, the resurrection of the medieval Holy Roman Empire, and we've been looking forward to it prophesied to come. I believe some event is going to happen suddenly." You know, a financial collapse doesn't, it builds up over months, but if you're not too sure of what you're watching, you won't see it. Did you know before we got the news item that the ships were dropping from 70 to 40? No, we weren't told. Suddenly, out of a clear blue sky, that's how financial things happen. You wake up on Monday morning and find that your bank's closed. The whole world is going to cause the nations of Europe to realize they must unite. Well, now, I think you can see that the very event that's going to trigger it is the economic situation in the world. Now, when the financial structure breaks down, all civilization is going to break down. I think I said all this before. It's important that we get it. This is the whole key. The financial crash sets off everything. Almost everything. Speculation. Does this crisis take away America's power so that she can no longer protect Europe from the perceived Russian threat? To put it bluntly, does the financial disaster finally bankrupt America, hence that Europe has got to see how to protect itself? You know, being the most powerful nation on the face of the earth costs, right? Let's just have a look at some of the costs. What's Mr. Trump up to lately, right? Well, right now he's threatening to go into Nigeria to stop the persecution of Christians. He's threatening to invade Mexico, the drug cartels. He's threatening to attack Yemen for attacking Israel. They're building up a huge force to threaten Venezuela. That includes a full active carrier group. That's $20 billion a year to run one of those groups. $20 billion to run it, just to keep them going. They've sent the U.S. General Ford down there. That's well, it was their biggest ship. And they've just recently launched the U.S. John F. Kennedy, which cost them $11.3 billion. And somebody said, you know what that is? That's just a metal coffin that somebody can use as target practice for a hypersonic missile. It's pretty hard to defend against something coming at you at 10, 12,000 miles an hour. They're building up the huge force to threaten Venezuela. They're involved in the Russian-Ukraine war. They're involved in the problems between Israel and the surrounding Arab nations. They're involved with trade wars with Europe, but also with China and others. They've got the Taiwan thing lurking in the background. And all this is done on borrowed money. The daily cost of operating an aircraft carrier, just the aircraft carrier, is between 6 and 8 million, depending on how big the carrier is. A day. Every solitary day. America's got 11 of these commissioned. A carrier comes with its own strike group, including destroyers, cruisers, plus hundreds of specialized missiles. 8,000 personnel, along with 48 Super Hornet strike aircraft, costing a mere $70 million each. All in all, it will probably cost you around $30 billion to build a carrier strike force size of Carrier Strike Group 5, which is the one that's now sitting off the coast of Venezuela. That carrier group, with the firepower they've got, would probably have won World War II in a week. Nothing could stand against this kind of firepower. It's simply not sustainable. But Europe can survive the crunch. And here's why. Germany and Italy hold the world's second and third largest gold reserves after the US. They've got 3,300 tons and 2,400 tons respectively. The US claims to hold 8,000 tons of gold, but this has not been audited since. Have a guess. 1953. Why don't you audit something this big for all those years? All those presidents have come, all those governments are gone, and nobody's done a proper audit of this gold. Germany got some gold back from them. that they'd given them for safekeeping. They got gold back. They didn't get the German gold back. It was some other gold. See, all this stuff, gold's got a fingerprint. You can tell exactly where it comes from. And, they weren't too hard, they weren't too happy about that. The last full audit of U.S. gold reserves occurred in 1953 under President Dwight D. Eisenhower. Most of you weren't even here then. I was nine. Dear me. Always remember Revelation 17:17. God is in total, absolute and utter control. And he's working out his plan, and it will work out to the last full stop. Mr. Armstrong continues, 45 days later, the beast armies will surround Jerusalem at the 1290 mark. 30 days later, the Great Tribulation will probably start with a nuclear attack on London and Britain, and possibly the same day or immediately after on the United States and Canadian cities. We know today they don't have to bomb every single city. They just lob one big one up into the beginning of the space and wipe out the electric grid and everything else, and the country would be on its knees in 2-3 days. But the financial crash appears to be a major starting point to end-time troubles, and this is the major reason that forces Europe to unite. Revelation 13, verse 4. Revelation 13 and verse 4. And they worshipped the dragon, which gave power to the beast. And they worshipped the beast, saying, who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? Whoa, all of a sudden, Europe is numero uno in the world. Why? Because the rest of the nations are floundering. The financial things knocked them all for six. Some of them is knocked further than six. Knocked them out. Basically, Britain and America. After this, you hear nothing of Britain and America apart from the fact they're attacked by Europe, which is very interesting. Also, there's a difference in attitude. The German people, as a people, have been non-violent since the war. We got that after the war, the kids going through school were all taught pacifism. And of course, you've gone through two generations or so since then. And suddenly, they've just turned again. No, well, we can't just do that. We've got to counter violence with violence. Frightening. Mr. Armstrong says, the Great Tribulation we will then fully realize is the time of Jacob's trouble, spoken of in Jeremiah 30 verse 7. And he says, at that time, a third of the people in our nations will die or shall have died by famine and disease epidemics. Another third will die of the war, our cities being destroyed, and the remaining third will be carried to a land of our enemies as slaves. Ezekiel 5 verse 2. We then have the Daniel 12 verse 1. Which is the timing of the Great Tribulation. And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince that stands up for the children of your people, and there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to the same time. And at that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book. There's protection for some lot here, isn't there? Verse 3. And they that are wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they shall turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever. That's our future job. To turn people to righteousness. Daniel, in verse 10, many shall be purified and made white and tried, but the wicked will do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise will understand. Why? Because they're watching. They're on God's wavelength. And then, of course, Revelation 12. I don't want to dwell on this because it's been well covered Mr. Ball did a sermon on this some years ago. But Revelation 12, verse 14, and to the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time from the face of the serpent. 3.5 years. Mr. Armstrong was very upset by GTA because he was spoofing the whole thing. You know, how can you spoof it? It's there in black and white in Revelation. Go to the end of Revelation, see the curse. If you add anything to it or take away anything to it, the end review is just not very good. Now, we got back to this 1290 days. There's something here we don't, again, tend to look at very much. Turn to Daniel 8. Daniel 8, verse 13. Then I heard one saint speaking, and another saint said unto that certain saint which spake, how long shall be the vision concerning the daily sacrifice and the transgression of desolation to give both the sanctuary and the host to be trodden down underfoot? And he said unto me, on 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. Now, the sanctuary was defiled at the 1290-day mark. Now, this 2,300 days is not quite what it seems. If you read the Hebrew, it's evenings and mornings. So that makes a big difference. It knocks it down to 1150 days. So if you go to the 1290-day mark and take away 1150, then the mark is, this mark is 140 days before the return of Christ, or 20 weeks. Then the sanctuary is cleansed. At this point, headquarters returns to Europe. As the sanctuary is cleansed, it could be possible that the sacrifice could then be re-established. So the sacrifices are going on when Christ returns. I don't know where that quote came from, so we'll label it speculation, just in case it's not right. But that does seem to be that, it does say that the Russian threat causes the beast to take his armies back out of the Middle East, back up to Rome. And when you look at what's going on in the background, this world is in utter and total chaos. It's hard to yeah. Now, let's have a look at this 1335. Blessed is he that waits and comes to the 1,335 days. Now, the word there, blessed, it means blessed, it means happiness. It means how happy. It's something utterly amazing. The word waiteth, in the Hebrew, it means to adhere to. Yeah? Hang on, hold fast. We've been preaching for years now, enduring to the end. According to Mr. Bullinger, the Hebrew accent suggests the rendering, blessed is he that expecteth and shall reach the goal. Expecting it. These people are expecting it. Are you expecting it? I certainly am. Because all the rest of the stuff that we've been told that's been going to happen over all the years has all happened on schedule, suddenly, and all the rest of it. But it all happened. It's all happened. Now, this period, just before the events that happened in the 1290 mark, the beast army surrounding Jerusalem and the stopping of the sacrifices, we need to look at it a bit more closely. Because this whole area is just, I hate overusing the word chaos. Can anybody come up with another word for chaos? It's unbelievable. Chaos is the only word that describes it. Prior to storming down into the Middle East, the beast army appears to be involved in a war with Islam. That's not as crazy as it sounds, because if you could get a confederation of Arab nations, of Islamic nations, they'd be more or less the same sort of size as Europe, around about 450 million or thereabouts. And they're heavily armed. Oh, these Arab nations, they've been buying all the latest toys and goodies from America. They can kill people at great rates. But unfortunately, if they try to tackle Germany, they're going to kind of like drive into a brick wall. Turn to Daniel 11. Over the years, I've heard so many people try to explain these. And I think as we watch the news, we see what's happening in the world, it becomes clearer. Verse 40, at the time of the end, okay, we agree we are, that's where we are. We're there now. The king of the south shall push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships, and he shall enter into the countries, and shall overflow and pass over, and he shall enter also into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown. But these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom, Turkey, and Moab, Jordan, and the chief of the children of Ammon. And he shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. In other words, he's taking over virtually the whole Middle East. Why not Jordan? You know, the Germans have got a massive air base in Jordan with fighter jets and refueling planes and all sorts of things. They're ready to start a small war there. So, yes, the word push is interesting. It means to butt with horns, figuratively to war against. Now, what could cause this? We have a problem in Europe. They let in a whole load of young Muslims. I said this years ago when all this happened. This is crazy. You saw the stream of people, I mean, 5-6 wide, snaking through the countryside. Thousands of them. And what were they? Young men, 18 to 24, fighting age people. And Germany sucked them all up. And they've paid dearly for it. But there you go. So, knowing how the Germans tend to treat problems with people they don't want, maybe they start working on the Muslims to get rid of them, one way or the other. My way or the highway type job. Could they start deporting the Muslim population? But whatever happens, the Arabs or the Islamists, or you want to call them, they take a thumping. And with that, Europe then goes charging on down into the Middle East, takes over most of it, which of course is interesting. It's got all this oil too, you see, which the Germans haven't got and they need. And they stopped the sacrifices at the 1290-day mark. It's only 45 days from 1290 to 1335, 6 weeks and 3 days. That doesn't seem long enough for a war between the King of the North and the King of the South, and then taking over most of the Middle East. It doesn't seem there's enough time for it to take place. However, the way the Germans work, with their blitzkrieg and the modern weaponry they've got, they could just nuke certain key points and then tell them that you too can have one of these sent to you in the mail or whatever. And it could be all over in a couple of days. So it's an interesting thing. But remember, the whole world is in chaos. Judah's getting a wound. Britain's getting a sickness. America's bankrupt and can't do a thing to help anybody. And meanwhile, Europe is storming down, taking over the whole Middle East, going into Israel, canning the sacrifices. You know, talk about chaos. But the big thing is, there's one point to bring out. If this was to happen, or start to happen, at 1335, happy would we be because we'd know exactly where we were in God's plan. That's just one little bit of speculation. Here's another one. This is one I got from Mr. Waterhouse, 1964. Malachi 3, verse 16. You know these verses very well. Then they that feared the Eternal spoke often one to another, and the Lord hearkened and heard, and a book of remembrance was written. Now, it's interesting, in Daniel 12, verse 1, there's a book of remembrance as well. It was written before him, for them that feared the Eternal and that thought upon his name. For those that were striving to live God's way and obey his laws. That's what it's all about. And they shall be mine, says the Lord of hosts, in that day when I make up my jewels, and I will spare them as a man spares his own child. Then they shall return and discern between the righteous and the wicked, between him that serves God and him that serves him not. They'll return as judges. Does that sound familiar? Now, speculation. Mr. Waterhouse speculated, is this the point when we finally make it? Somehow we find out that our names are in that book? As the world falls into the end time events, Jesus said, when the book is written, we're still talking to one another. We're still physical human beings. It would appear. Is that when Christ is making up his jewels? So what's happening at 1335? Basically, we don't know. But it's got to be something fantastic. It's got to be something that, in spite of a world that is collapsing around us, makes us happy. And the only thing I can think of is there's something happens that shows us exactly where we are in the whole scheme of things, and we know exactly what God's going to do next. Because keep in mind, we then have the heavenly signs. After 2.5 years of the tribulation. Revelation 14 verse 9 talks about the wrath of God being poured out. This is the seven last plagues. But you know, Mr. Armstrong did point this out very clearly. This happens in the presence of the Lamb. Christ is here. That raises a whole load of questions. We understand that at the seventh trump, Christ returns. It's 1 Corinthians 15:52. We all know that. We know that the plagues are poured out in the presence of the holy angels and the Lamb, Revelation 14. So how long does all this take? Mr. Armstrong says, first comes the great tribulation, after the signs of the sun and the moon and the stars, after the day of the Lord, and Christ comes in the day of the Lord, or very soon after its beginning, and I don't know whether that's a few days, a few weeks, or a few months. I don't know. I don't think it's a few years, but God doesn't give us the time, so I don't know, and you don't know, which is very, very true. But we can ask questions. How long is it going to take? How long is it going to take? We have this prophecy in Joel that Mr. Armstrong brings. The great tribulation will be cut short, Matthew 24, verse 22, by the day of the Lord. That is the time of God's intervention in world affairs. If you look at the seven last plagues, many of them are copies of the original thing of Satan's wrath. Only instead of some of the ships in the sea sinking and some of the life in the sea dying, it's all wiped out. Christ is just that little bit more effective. And he mentions this prophecy in Joel. And he's talking about sanctify ye a fast, call a solemn assembly. The day of the Lord is at hand, and as the destruction from the Almighty shall come, O Lord, to thee will I cry. Blow the trumpet in Zion, sound the alarm in my holy mountain, that all the inhabitants of the land tremble, for the day of the Lord comes, for it is nigh at hand, a day of darkness, of a gloominess, a day of clouds and thick darkness. Mr. Armstrong continues, therefore also now, said the Eternal, turn you even to me with your heart, with fasting and with weeping and with mourning, and rend it your heart and not your garments. And turn unto the Eternal your God, for he is gracious and merciful, slow to anger. The day of the Lord will not come until God move swiftly to cut short the great tribulation. But we are drawing very near to the great tribulation. It probably has to be more than 3.5 years before the coming of Christ in power and glory. Yet what did Christ warn about those who say, my Lord delays his coming? He pronounced a woe unto them. We dare not say, oh well, there's at least another 3.5 years, lots of time yet. It reminds me of the salesman who was sent down to Africa to sell shoes. And he came back and he says, forget it, guys. And I said, what's the matter? He said, there's 300 million people down there, none of them wear shoes. Oh, And there's a bit of a change in management, and they sent another guy down a bit later on. And he came back and he said, double the size of the factory, we're quids in here. I said, why? There's 300 million people down there and none of them wear shoes. What a market. The same situation, but he saw it one way, the other guy saw it another. And people are in danger of doing the same thing. Another 3.5 years yet. With the chaos going around them, these people can't realize what's going on. When you start looking at this, you know, wars here, wars there. Millions of people dying. Not a couple of hundred here and a couple of hundred there. So we look at those plagues. Revelation 16, you can go through them all. We've got the terrible beast, boils and things, that grievous sores on the men that worship the beast. And you got the third angel pouring, rivers and fountains become blood. Then the sun scorches people. And the fifth angel poured out his veil upon the seat of the beast, and it became darkness. And they gnawed their tongues in pain. So it was something just a bit more than being dark. And the sixth angel, this is where it gets interesting. The sixth angel poured out his veil upon the great river Euphrates, and the water that was dried up, for the way of the kings of the east might be prepared. So that's when the army comes down. I don't know about you, but I always had it for many years in my head that Christ arrived, smacked into the Mount of Olives, the Mount split in two, and the whole army literally dissolved in front of him. Doesn't seem to be that way at all. You see, he's around a while. And as Mr. Armstrong said, it could be a week, it could be months, it could be a year. Yes, we don't know. That's why Christ said, at a time you think not. You don't know the day or the hour. But know this, I'm coming back, and my reward is with me. And that's what we need to be hanging on to. But this army, that's when the army comes. And then, behold, Revelation 16, verse 15. Behold, I come as a thief. Blessed is he that watches and keeps his garments, lest he walk naked and they see his shame. So this watching is a very active thing. It's not just a case of watching. It's watching with understanding. We can look at something and say, well, this is happening. Right, we should be seeing this next. Or we should be following this next. And keeps his garments. Pure, clean garments is the righteousness of the saints. That's what we should be striving for, is to line up our lives with Christ. That we think like him. We're going to be doing the same job as him. We're going to be in the same family as him. And we've got to be like him. And he gathered them together in a place called in the Hebrew tongue Armageddon. That's the battle. And remember Zechariah 14 verse 2, to make a note of it. I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle. I, God says. Again, it's like Revelation 17, verse 17. God's in total command. When he tells those nations, stop your squabbling, get together, and sort out the common enemy. Come on, let's be having you. And then, of course, Revelation 16, the seventh angel then pours out his veil on the earth, and there are voices and thunders and lightnings. A great earthquake, such as was not since men were on the earth. And the great city was divided. Babylon came up for remembrance. She gets flattened. In verse 20, every island fled away and mountains were not found. That's what you call landscaping on a massive scale. And you know, if you think about it, how does the Bible start? The Bible starts off with Christ creating a garden, putting men in it. The Bible basically ends this 6,000 years with God creating the whole earth like a garden and putting people in it. And so that they will know, you will read it just now, so that people will know it's him, that he has done this. You see, because right at the beginning, Satan got in there and twisted people, and Adam and Eve made the wrong decision, and after that, man was on his own. And he got lumbered with briars and thorns and thistles and all the other nasty horribles that that make life very difficult. Let's look at time to wind this up. When the dust settles, is finally the dawn of a new world. Turn to Isaiah 11, verse 12. This is what we're looking forward to. We're coming through a time which is, I don't care how much we go on about it, we're not going to get how terrible and chaotic this is. You know, we've got 8 billion people on this planet, and the vast majority of them are going to be wiped out. That's just a fact of life. Isaiah 11, verse 12. And he shall set up an ensign for the nations, and shall assemble the outcasts of Israel, and gather together the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the world. Wherever they are, he'll gather them up. Why? So that heathen can learn. Ezekiel 36, 36. Let's read that. You can read that one. Ezekiel 36, verse 36. And the heathen that are left around about you, who shall be very few, shall know that I, the Lord, built the ruined places and plant that was desolate. I, the Eternal, have spoken it, and I will do it. Interesting to note, the Bible starts off with Christ creating a garden, as I said. Genesis 2, verse 8, you can get the reference there. Created the garden, planted the garden, everything in it was beautiful, everything was available for food, and unfortunately there were two trees that they got mixed up. Now we have this garden creation on a mega scale. For Isaiah 41 verse 18, I know we tend to read this at the feast, you know. Isaiah 41, verse 18. I will open rivers in high places and fountains in the midst of the valleys. I will make the wilderness a pool of water and the dry springs of water. I saw a program the other day of a Canadian family with their house burnt down. They had to build a new house, but they built it further up the hill and there was no water. And they tried all sorts, and eventually he took a chance and got a big drill up and just drilled right up at the top of the mountain. When they pulled the drill out, the water started bubbling up, and they had a well. Beautiful, crystal clear mountain water. And he just said, you know, without that, this whole project would have died. We wouldn't have been able to live up here. It would never have happened. You've got to have that water. And God says, I will plant in the wilderness the cedar, the acacia tree, the myrtle and the oil tree. I will set in the desert the fir tree, the pine and the box tree together. That's an awful lot of land covered in trees. We're looking at trees by the trillion. Now, I wonder if he's using the empirical we when he says I will, if he's talking about me and the family will. But you know what? I don't know how many trees that must be, but the Sahara Desert is thousands upon thousands upon thousands of square miles. And there are many other deserts as well. So there's a lot of trees to be planted, and there's a lot of rivers to be created, a lot of lakes to be created, a lot of springs to be created. And then they've got to fill them with fish, because that's going to be one of the big dietary things in the millennium, is fish. Isaiah 41, verse 20, he says, that they may see and know and consider and understand together. This is what God wants. This is what he wants. That the hand of the Lord has done this, and the Holy One of Israel has created it. And then he'll add, and now I can get back to what I said to you 6,000 years ago. I will now walk among you, and you will be my people, and I will be your God. That's what he wants. That's what's coming. That's at the end of all this mess. And that's what we've got to focus on. Let's just finish off by reading Mark chapter 13. Mark 13, verse 28. Now learn the parable of the fig tree. When her branch is yet tender and put forth leaves, you know that summer is near. So in like manner, when you shall see these things come to pass, know that it is nigh, even at the door.